Welcome to Conversations from the Archive. And Conversations from the Archive are a series of interviews with people who've donated collections to the National Dance Archive of Ireland. I'm Catherine Foley, I'm the director of the National Dance Archive, and it's my pleasure to be here today with Michael Blair. And Michael is very much responsible for donating a collection, the Irish National Ballet. Michael, thank you very much for coming along today. And for people generally, can you explain what the Irish National Ballet was?
Irish National Ballet was founded in Cork by Joan Denise Moriarty in 1973. It was a professional ballet company working mostly in the contemporary field, and it continued until 1983 in its 10th anniversary as Irish Ballet Company, and then became Irish National Ballet. Sadly, in 1989, government funding was withdrawn for the company for a variety of reasons, and the ballet company closed. So 2015, we celebrated the 40th anniversary of the first performance of the company and the 25th anniversary of the last performance of the company. And as part of that reunion, I was fortunate enough to come across a large volume of archive material, which I spent some time collating and have now donated to the National Dance Archive of Ireland.
That's wonderful, wonderful material, and bringing back so many happy memories, I'm sure, to you.
Absolutely. I mean, I was a member of the company. I was a stage manager. I was never a dancer. I was a stage manager. I joined the company in 1982, and I was there until the bitter end in 1989.
So can you talk to us about, I suppose, life with the Irish National Ballet? If you were looking at a year in the life of the Irish National Ballet, what happened as a member of that company?
Well, essentially all the contracts, the year-round contracts, would start at the end of August, and we'd commence with a series of rehearsals for an autumn tour, which usually went out around about October and November. So we probably had new members of the company arriving each year, so they'd have to be taught the repertoire. There would be new choreographers, there were new pieces being made. And then we would go out on tour in November, usually October, November. Then in December, we would probably have a holiday and we might do some education work. And then in early part of the new year, we would always work towards a season in the Cork Opera House, which meant, because of the size restrictions of touring smaller venues around Ireland, we could do bigger scale pieces in the Opera House and in the Abbey Theatre ultimately. We'd then go out on a spring tour. We would then probably start preparing for the Abbey season, which usually took place in the summer every year, and then usually there was a month's holiday. So it was a year-round occupation.
So how many ballet dancers were actually employed?
The company fluctuated. When I joined the company, I think there were 20 dancers, and then there would have been a stage crew of three people, there had been a wardrobe mistress, and there had been three administration staff. And then the dancers, it would fluctuate, probably depending on how much funding was available. And so I do remember it being down as far as 14 at one stage. And then at one stage, there weren't year-round contracts. There were nine-month contracts for the dancers. Mm-hmm. And so we very much had to tune what we were able to do to the amount of funding available.
And where were your rehearsal spaces?
We rehearsed in a space in Glanmire in Cork, which unfortunately was not where the office was. So the office was actually in Emmett Place, opposite the Opera House in Cork. The wardrobe department was about 10 minutes walk from the office, mm-hmm. and the scenery store was 10 minutes drive from the office, so we didn't have a collective headquarters. At one stage, the Firkin Crane building in Shandon had been purchased by the government and given to Irish National Ballet to develop as a headquarters. And two things, unfortunately, ruled against that. One was that about a year after they were granted the building, it was burnt down, it was burnt to the ground. And having been the old Cork butter market, a lot of the wood inside the building was impregnated with butter fat, and the place blazed. And we were left with a smoking ruin. And then, unfortunately, when the trust fund set up to develop the building was really beginning to make progress, the company at the same time was falling out of love with the Arts Council and the funding was withdrawn. So suddenly we had a headquarters but no company.
And that was quite disastrous for the people working
in
the company.
It was. I mean, it was very emotional. We were probably aware there were problems, but we didn't quite know the nature of them. And then in about the autumn 1988, the first reports came out that there were problems between the Arts Council and the company, and the Arts Council actually refused a grant.
And why do you think that?
I think essentially the company had been based in Cork all its life. There was a lot of discussion about whether it should be in Dublin or not. And I think there was a feeling, as it goes now for a lot of Cork people, they didn't have to listen to the rest of the country because they were Cork people. Mm-hmm. And we just exhausted the patience of the Arts Council, and they were having, there was a lot more competition for funds between contemporary dance companies, and a lot of them based in Dublin, and we'd got the lion's share of the dance grant for a number of years, and the Arts Council had been trying to persuade the company to change their way of working, and they were just resolute and they wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I think eventually we just wore the patience of the Arts Council out, and they couldn't support our application.
Very unfortunate.
Very unfortunate. At that stage, you know, there were 18 people in the company, and most of us saw the writing on the wall. Some people were actually made redundant at that stage, and then the company went on in 1989 to do one more production, full-length ballet on the life of Oscar Wilde, but that was funded directly by the Department of the Taoiseach rather than the Arts Council.
Okay.
And while we were actually all in Belfast completing the third week of this tour, on the Thursday of that week, word came from Cork that all avenues had been exhausted and the company would close.
So the end of an era.
End of an era, absolutely. And we were out on tour doing what we did, and suddenly I had to sit the company down and say, look, I'm really sorry, but there won't be jobs in the future.
Yeah, because last year having been in Cork and you're celebrating the anniversary of the Irish National Ballet, so many wonderful people came together and many memories, many anecdotes, and especially those relating to the touring of the company. So can you talk to us a little bit about that, Michael?
Well, I think the things have changed in Ireland now, where there was a great deal of infrastructure development and there are theatres in small towns. When we were touring between 1973 and 1989, there weren't the facilities, and quite often you were playing in parochial halls and school halls, some of which probably hadn't been used since the last time the ballet company had been on tour. Mm-hmm. So the buildings were perhaps not in the best of repair. They were generally, as we toured in spring and autumn, they were generally found to be cold and quite often damp. But we would have to go in and essentially create a theatre in these halls, because it was Miss Moriarty's belief that we had a loyal following and we had to be loyal to them. So we went back to small towns, and literally we went to every small town in Ireland.
Does anyone stand out for you?
Perhaps for the wrong reasons, and to protect the guilty, I'll not name them. But yes, I mean, I do remember halls where we turned up and there was an infestation of mice. Mm. We turned up in a hall where all the power in the hall was run through a 50 pence in the slot meter, and we had to bribe a local youngster to sit feeding 50 p's in the meter so we could do the show, because we were using the power. And I remember a hall where we discovered that the steelwork above the stage wasn't actually attached to one of the walls of the building. It had part company with it, and we had to try and rescue that. So, I mean, it was very challenging, but we felt, because we were playing to pretty much capacity houses, it was definitely appreciated that we went out to small towns, and we simply weren't saying, we'll play Dublin, Cork, Galway, Limerick, and leave it at that. We went out to small towns all across Ireland. As far as Gweedore in the north of Ireland, we toured extensively in the north of Ireland as well, and we toured into towns such as Tullow and Arklow.
So you played to capacity houses, and why do you think the ballet was so popular with people in provincial towns of Ireland?
I think Miss Moriarty had set out, prior to this company, she had run Irish Theatre Ballet, and she was resolute that she would always go out to small towns. She would go to them rather than them coming to us, and people appreciated that. Plus, it was an art form a lot of people didn't really understand, but they knew there was something lovely about it, and they wanted to go and see it, and they thought it was very special it came to their town. Mm. And we were always made to feel very welcome. I do have recollections that quite often committees would suddenly produce supper for the entire company after the show. And, you know, we really were very spoiled.
Great sense of hospitality.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm.
So going back over the years in your work, I suppose, with Irish National Ballet, you worked as the manager of the company. So what exactly did you do in
the company? Well, initially I joined as the stage and technical manager. And so I was in charge of getting the shows on. So on tour, it would be about literally transporting scenery, lights, etc., and turning parochial halls into theatres. We did a lot of one-night stands, which were kind of challenging because it meant the crew was on the road very early and finishing very late. We were always delighted to get to a sort of more major centre such as Waterford, where you might get three nights, which meant you could relax after the first night. Then, obviously, when we went into the Abbey or the Cork Opera House or the Grand Opera House in Belfast, that was more about perhaps mounting more complex pieces because there was the theatre equipment to cope with them. And we used to have what I would call a two-tier system, in that productions that went to the large theatres in Belfast and Cork and Dublin would not go out on tour, and because of the constraints of a small stage, etc., we had a repertoire for touring. And then in 1984 we decided to scale down but still keep some of the bigger productions and take them out on tour. And that actually was one of the more successful things that we did, was because people felt we're seeing exactly the same things as we're seeing in Dublin and Cork, only it's in our hometown. And I think that was a very valuable end. After that, I jumped across the desk, if you like, and became the company manager. So I was responsible for organising tours, for making sure everybody had contracts and everybody got paid, etc. And I was still the company manager when the company, as they unfortunately, closed in April 1989.
So if you're looking back over the years at all the choreographies that happened as part of the Irish National Ballet, what for you were the more successful ballets?
Oh, I think very definitely the essence of the company, because we didn't have enough dancers to do the major classics, we would do extracts from the classics. There were a lot of pas de deux, and we did a suite of dances from Paquita, etc. But what really worked for us was contemporary choreography, which required classical training to be carried out. And there were a number of ballets. Demiretta's Affairs ballets were all extremely successful. There was a Dutch choreographer called Charles Charney, who we knew him as Chuck Charney. His ballets were very successful, and people like Rosemary Helliwell. Then, of course, we had some Miss Moriarty's pieces, which were Irish folk dance translated for ballet. And they worked very well. I think at the end of the day, probably the most commercial successful piece we had was the Playboy of the Western World, not least because we had the Chieftains playing live in the pit. And that went to, as well as playing in Cork and Dublin and Belfast, it also went to Sadler's Wells in London. It went to the City Centre in New York, and it played outdoor in Rennes in Brittany as part of the Tommy Lynn Wee Festival.
So would you say the reason it was so successful is because of the live music, the fact that Chieftains...
I think the live music, and obviously it's a very well... The Playboy is a very well-known story. It's one of the most, if you like, collected of Irish plays. People go and see it several times. And our unique take was that in the drama of the Playboy, the race scene is alluded to and is watched by the girls, but it takes place off stage. And Miss Moriarty put the race scene from Playboy on stage, which is the first time I've ever been seen on stage.
And what was she like to work with, Joan Denise Moriarty?
She could be infuriating, I'll be absolutely honest. She was very passionate and very committed. She could be very stubborn, and she had a very clear idea of what she wanted. And sometimes no amount of discussion would change that. I think one of the issues that probably came up most often was that she had come through a background of dance, which had a lot of work with amateur companies, and her Cork Ballet Company was the absolute example of that. And I don't think she felt comfortable in a professional company environment where she felt everything was about money. And it was difficult sometimes to explain to her, yes, it's about money because this is how we make our living. The dancers and the stage crew were dependent on this for a living, whereas she would have felt, you know, her Cork Ballet dancers did it for love, and she thought we were mercenary. She was very single-minded. She obviously had been required to be single-minded when she got the company off the ground and got it out on tour in 1973. I think she might have been better off, as history has recorded, she she felt she was hunted out of the company, and after the Brinson report, she was victimised and she was very unhappy. I would like to have seen her perhaps say, I've got the company established, I've got it out on the road, I've done my 5 or 7 years, and I'm going to hand it over to somebody who will now take it to the next stage. And she probably would have saved herself an awful lot of grief at that stage, but she decided to go on. And then, as we know, she felt she was hunted out of the place.
And do you think she was hunted out?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think the Arts Council had wanted change for a number of years. They certainly had never specified that part of the change should be the departure of Miss Moriarty. What they had said was, but you have to do things a different way. And she wasn't really up for change.
And what do you mean by a different way?
The Arts Council was starting in that year to become much more concentrating on the facts and figures. The fact that you were there wasn't necessarily a guarantee of a grant next year. Mm-hmm. They wanted to see more effort being put into fundraising to add to any money that they might give to the company. They wanted to see 3 to 5 year plans. Mm-hmm. This was all very much outside the way the company worked. And I think eventually that was our downfall. The company just would not bend to the Arts Council's way of doing things. And there was an attitude that any opinion expressed by the Arts Council was an attempt to dictate artistic policy, which it wasn't. It was just that the Arts Council, I suspect, for good reason, felt, well, if we're paying the bills, we'd like our voice to be heard.
Yeah, so how do the members feel about that at the time?
I think one of the problems for people working in the company was that there was a great degree of secrecy, and we weren't aware of things that were going on, inverted commas, above our heads. And so, unfortunately, the first we'd have heard about there being difficulties with the Arts Council, for instance, a report appeared in the Irish Times, and a number of dancers read that.
You wouldn't have heard about it until it appeared in the Irish Times?
We didn't hear about it until it appeared in the Irish Times, and it was obviously extremely shocking at that stage. We were aware that, you were probably aware of a general unease, but no more than that. And then the report came out to say that the Arts Council was considering not funding the company.
And that would literally mean the end of Irish National Ballet.
It would have, and I mean, we went on for about another 2 years, but we, by that stage, were all very aware that there was a lively, if not constructive, discussion going on between the company and the Arts Council. And then, as I say, finally in late autumn 1988, the Arts Council announced they would not fund the company on the basis of the submission they'd made. So, essentially then, an approach was made to the Department of the Taoiseach, who funded one more production, and then that was it, the company folded.
And do you think Joan Denise Moriarty could have done something about it, bring somebody in to help her put together, let's say, a 3-year plan?
I think potentially she could have, but from the time that there were obviously discussions going on between the Arts Council and Joan Denise and the board, I think the focus became very much on her personally. And what might be more constructive was to say, look, Miss Moriarty, you've got the company to this stage. We now need a development specialist to take it to the next stage. As delicately as possible, suggest that perhaps it wasn't her. However, what happened was that this became the symbol to many people on the board and in Cork generally, that the Arts Council were trying to do Miss Moriarty down. And I think there was a period where the defence of Miss Moriarty got in the way of the defence of the company generally.
Yes, and this all, of course, impacted on the company
it
and
did.
On the dancers
it
within
did.
The company and everybody else working as part of Irish National Ballet.
Indeed.
So there were, I suppose, looking at the company when it was in its prime.
Yes.
You know, because, you know, there was a time when the company was working extremely well, creating
yes,
work, performing work, touring around
yes.
the country. And so what was it like then, I suppose, for the members of the company? Because I know, I suppose, having been at the anniversary,
yes.
there was a very close-knit kind of a community.
One of the remarkable things about the reunion, the anniversary last year, was that I found myself having conversations with people I hadn't seen in 27 years, but it was like we'd just finished a coffee break and come back into the office to sit down and have a conversation. we were all very committed. I mean, dancers have got to be committed to their art, otherwise they're not going to go on being dancers. And I found it, I mean, I found the dancers extremely professional, hardworking, and it was a pleasure to work with them all. And there was also the sense that we were doing something unique in Ireland. And I think possibly that was a slight false sense of security, because we thought this would never change. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were getting good houses, but the problems were that when we were based in Cork, kind of purely on a cost basis, you know, you had to pay touring allowance once you were more than 60 miles from Cork. So draw a circle around Cork for 60 miles and there's not that many towns inside it. Draw a circle from Dublin 60 miles. We could have performed a lot more had we been based in Dublin. Mm-hmm. But yet the idea of the company moving from Cork, which was Miss Moriarty's base, mm-hmm. where the board had all been selected from, was just anathema. Mm-hmm. And I really did enjoy working for the company. I think the dancers were very special people. And it was interesting. There were some people who were there for a number of years. One of our principal dancers was Kathleen Smith, who actually came for a first period, then left, but then mm-hmm. came back because she wanted to be there, because she was working with the choreographer at Domi Writers' Affair. And we were very lucky to have choreographers like that. And some of the guest teachers were extremely famous names. And they were coming to teach in Cork, mainly because Muriel Large, who was the administrator of the company, had worked in Western Theatre Ballet in Scotland with Peter Darrell, and she knew an awful lot of these teachers personally. But people like Harry Haythorne from Royal New Zealand Ballet would come and teach, Brenda Last from the Royal Ballet, Lindy Arias, who was Margot Fonteyn's cousin, came to teach as well. And we really did have an extremely high standard. But it was just the fact that the dancers were prepared to put up with some of the rough conditions because they were working with good choreographers, good teachers, mm-hmm. and that's what dancers need.
And they enjoy the touring.
Absolutely. Well, I think some of the touring conditions weren't always ideal. Mm-hmm. But I think people had really realised if you really want to have sunshine and warm temperatures, perhaps touring in Ireland in the spring and autumn of the year is not the time to do that.
No, it's not.
You have to go out and just take it on.
Yeah. And did you have a boss when you all went? All these dancers?
Yes, there was always a coach on hire. The crew would travel in the scenery truck. They would go out in advance of the dancers. Then there would be a tour bus booked. And it would generally leave around about 11. The dancers would then get to the hall, do class. Then possibly some nights, if the stage was particularly small or a strange shape, there'd have to be what's called placing calls. They'd have to rearrange things to fit the stage. Mm-hmm. And then we'd be on at 8 o'clock that night. Mm-hmm. The dancers would all be back in the bus to the hotel. The crew would then obviously have to take down everything they'd done during the day. So we'd end up probably getting into the hall at 8 in the morning and leaving about 2 o'clock the next morning.
A long day.
A long day. But it was very rewarding. It didn't last forever, but as I say, there were nights you just thought, I would love to be here for another night, because you spent all day setting something up and it all comes down in about 3 hours.
And what about music? Was there live music or recorded music?
No, it was all recorded music when we were on tour. At the times we used live music. I think in the early days of the company, when they performed in Cork Opera House, Cork Symphony Orchestra and Professor Alois Fleischmann would accompany the company. And then in 1979, when Playboy was first produced, the Chieftains obviously played for all the instances of Playboys, including the ones in New York and in France. But on tour, it was recorded music.
Okay. And going back to your time, because how many years were you with Irish National Ballet?
I was there 7.5 years.
7.5 years.
So half the life of the company, roughly.
Okay. And if you were to pick one particular, I suppose, moment in your time with the ballet company, what would that moment be that for you maybe has happy associations?
I think the moment when I wasn't alone in this. In 1984, we created a full-length ballet of The Lady of the Camellias by Domi Writers' Affair's choreography, Sanson's music, and this was a full-length piece. And I think the week we spent in the Abbey in Dublin performing this, we all felt we really had arrived somewhere. And we had put a major piece of work on the stage. Anybody working in any version of theatre to create a new production, whether it be an established play or an established ballet, but you are part of something unique after the first night, because until the first night, that particular iteration, whether it be a new piece or it's a recreation of an existing piece, didn't exist, and you've done something remarkable and new. And I think we all felt Camellias was on the stage. This was something really, really good. The saddest thing of all is it was seen for a week in Dublin and a week in Cork, and that was it. And we never took it on tour, and it's a piece that I think we all felt should have gone further.
And was it ever recorded?
It was recorded, not professionally. It was recorded for the company's archive. The company used to video everything because that was the main teaching aid. So ballets would be videoed in rehearsals so they could be taught again if they were being revived. Mm-hmm. They would also make an archive recording of pieces in performance. Quite often the quality wasn't wonderful because we were filming them in the stage lighting, ambient light, if you like. It wasn't lit for video, so quite often they were very dark. And when lighting changes happen, if the stage went bright, it would take a moment or two for the video camera to pick that up.
Yes.
So they weren't great quality recordings. But yes, Camellias was recorded.
Well, that's great. And yeah, hopefully someday we'll have a copy of that.
Yes, indeed.
In the National Dance Archive. And one of the final questions, your 7 years working for the company, do you think that has impacted on the rest of your life?
Oh, absolutely. I think definitely it was. I'd worked in theatre for a good number of years before that, but it was the first time where I felt there was a company who actually were depending on me to get things done and stage manage and keep them all. I think one of the great things about dancers is they trust their stage crew, because dancers need to concentrate on what they're doing. So they need to know lighting and the staging is all going to happen without them having to think about it. And I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed the touring. I enjoyed working in Cork. I have to say, I think probably the one thing, or one of the things that made me determined, was when the end came and I was made redundant, I just became determined I would never be made redundant again in my life. Because it was very hurtful, you know. And I mean, I think for a lot of the dancers, you must remember, quite often on contract, so they expected to be there for 3 or 4 months, whereas stage crew and administration were there year round. And it was very, very painful when we had to say, no, that's it, and close the doors. But I genuinely look back on my time with great fondness. I wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Well, thank you very much, Michael, for talking with us today. Bye now.